Folks, we are still doing a couple sound checks, couple camera checks, but I think it's time to go after like 3 hours of prep here. Right. Welcome to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Sessions podcast. We're in a little bit of a different space. We're in Portland, SCA Expo Weekend, which is exciting. But we have a special guest on the podcast today. We have Tanner Coulson. Tanner, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Is it really?
It is. Yeah. It's like a full circle moment. I've been listening to this, as they say, long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Fine. I'm a guest now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
It's so incredible.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
I had to.
Powerful.
Yeah. Tanner was just talking about how our terminology on the podcast has seeped into his vocabulary and actually made it worse.
Yeah.
A big
thing has been, and I'm sure if you're a long time listener, you can appreciate this, but I just say tasty. Yeah. I describe and as these guys do, I describe everything with that word. If it's good, tasty just means good to me now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yep.
Tasty. Yeah. Like, oh, that's a tasty podcast episode. Oh yeah, yeah, dude.
That was powerful. Dude.
Oh, powerful. There it is. Oh, wow. This is so exciting. Tanner, thank you so much for taking the time to walk over here from your Airbnb.
Yeah.
Chat with us. It's before we get into the whole backstory a little bit as to how we met, how we connected over coffee, let's pour some Batchy.
Let's go.
Friends, just because we're in Portland, no exceptions. We brought our Breville brewer for the podcast, and I made sure to grab some decaf because after a whole day of expo or cupping, we're pretty overly caffeinated. Thank you. But so I brought some decaf, but guess what? I brought everything to brew coffee except for the filters, the dang filters. And then Tanner was like, hey, I can go and get some filters if you want. My Airbnb is like 10 minutes away.
Yeah, conveniently located. Miles were walked for this coffee to be brewed.
That's true.
Wait, can I fulfill a lifelong dream right now? Okay, ready? Watch this. Oh, it's under extracted.
Yes!
Technically, most of the time it's over extracted, but you're right, this is under extracted. It's a little weak.
You guys are blowing up the sound levels. I'm trying to control it over here, but for very good reasons.
Just having a good time.
This is bad.
Is it bad?
Yeah.
What happened?
You're right. I did go a little too coarse.
I tried to tell you.
I just thought it's decaf. Decaf. I mean, at least for me, most of the time in brewing, decaf tends to require a coarser grind size.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's what I thought. And then, I mean, I'm looking at the carafe from here, and the carafe itself looks like almost see-through.
Wow, I'm struggling over here as the podcast sound engineer here.
We've already fulfilled our quota of tasty coffees for the day.
Yeah,
so
that's fine.
More, yeah.
It's fine. This is kind of reminiscent of diner coffee.
Oh, it's way better than that.
Oh, it's way better. Are you kidding me? When was the last time you had diner coffee, actually?
Oh, man. You're right. I have not been in a diner in years.
Sergi literally forgot what a diner coffee tastes like, and then he's going to call this diner coffee.
Not flavor. I still has like significantly okay flavor. It's just like, it's thin.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like just weak.
Well.
Also, let's just say this.
Amateur cupper.
Okay. I was waiting for someone to do that today at the cupping, but
I know I was waiting too. Yeah, but well, folks, not a successful batch brew, but it's okay. We have some. We've tasted plenty of tasty coffees today.
Yeah,
and we have some Topo Chico that I need to crack open. But while I crack open my Topo Chico and spill a coffee all over my jeans, Tanner, give us a little intro. Who are you?
Yeah, Tanner in a nutshell. Sort of came into the coffee scene through TikTok, really, in late 2019, 2020, when the world almost ended.
Yeah.
And I've always been like sort of interested in business marketing stuff. I was listening to Gary Vee around the same time that I sort of developed an interest in specialty coffee. And Yeah, he was just yelling about TikTok for a long time, and I was brewing pour overs in my dorm room, and I was like, man, I look and there's no coffee content or very little coffee content on TikTok, and I was like, man, and I'm the least technology minded, you know, film photography, not my style, but you know, I just decided, why not try this little app and see what could happen? Because at the very least, it'll be a good time. I'll be doing something that I'm passionate about. So sort of started making content that way. And, you know, as COVID happened, had some content that kind of blew up. And I realized, man, this could be like a real thing that I could do. And I started to feel like if I could just make a living in the coffee industry, you know, that kind of became my new, like going through school, I didn't really know what I was going to do or what I wanted to do with my life. And then, you know, just career wise. And I got passionate about it to the level where I was like, man, if I could just work in the coffee industry, I don't care if I make a lot of money, and I probably won't, but I'm just passionate about this, and it would be cool to pursue something for my career that I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, just through all of that content stuff, that turned, you know, TikTok turns into Instagram and YouTube and every platform. And through that, I got a job working at Flair Espresso, which has been amazing. So I've been there for about a year out of college. And yeah, I've just grown the platforms to the level where it can be sort of a self-sustaining business for myself, along with working for Flair, which has been really sweet. And I feel like, I'm just living my dream life with the job that I always wanted. And I don't know how it gets better from here. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Speaking of Flair, we do have an episode with Andrew. That's a good listen as well. If you folks want to go back
in the industry, they call him the Rob Lowe of coffee. That's what they say.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Now that.
And by the industry, I mean the Flair team.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. For sure. Yes. Yeah. Folks, if you don't know why that makes sense, you probably just need to check out that episode on video and just listen to it.
It's powerful.
It's awesome. Powerful. Yeah. Hearing you say all that, you own a line of coffee.
Yeah. Custom Coffee. It's my brand. Just did that as a way, because I feel like for people getting into coffee, and this was my experience as well, that there weren't, it's sort of unclear. There wasn't a lot of content made at the time of, you know, where should you be getting coffee and what is specialty coffee? People think they can go to the grocery store and it says specialty coffee on the bag and it must be. And so I just wanted to give people a way that they could buy something and know that this is sort of in the realm of what specialty coffee is like as a sort of starting out experience, and sort of kind of calibrate based on that, because I wish that I had had something like that, that I knew I could, you know, this is the good stuff and this is going to be tasty. Because I've had so many experiences when I got started of brewing coffees that I expected to be amazing. And it turned out that it was just dark roast, like nothing special. And I was like, this is supposed to taste special. And it just kind of tastes like dark coffee. So I just wanted to give people a little something that they could know, this is going to be tasty and sort of be a good introduction to the world of specialty coffee.
That's awesome. Speaking of that, do you remember your first experience with a very bonkers coffee that kind of stopped you in your tracks and then like, okay, there's got to be more to this coffee thing?
I think in classic form it was a natural Ethiopian, as we can probably all relate.
Of course.
Fruity. I was like, wow, I can't believe that coffee can taste like this. This is incredible. Just that it could taste fruity. And, you know, my first experiences with specialty coffee where I was in this office, there was a coffee club, and they would grind their there was nice specialty coffee behind me. They were brewing Heart a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is like literally a block from here.
Yep, which is cool. And I was like, why does it smell so good? This is crazy. I've never like smelled coffee that smells like fruits and stuff. And I grab a bag off, you know, from behind me, and it would say like raspberry, chocolate, caramel. And I was like, oh, these guys are adding flavors to their coffee. That's no good. Because I didn't know. But just through learning about it more, I was just like, man, I cannot believe that nice coffee can taste incredible. It can taste fruity. It can taste fun and funky. And I was all about it. Dove right in. In the college dorm room with my little pour over setup.
Oh, that's what I was gonna ask. So was it a V60 or?
It was a Chemex.
Chemex.
I've backtracked now. I mean, the Chemex is great. I bought it because the carafe is with the dripper, and you have to buy, yeah, you can exactly. buy less things. But
that's very valid. Hey, listen, that's, I actually, now that you say that, I'm yeah. like, oh wait, that actually makes a lot of sense. Like,
because when I was getting into yeah. it, I was like, oh, you have, there's so many things that you have to buy. You have to buy a carafe, and you have to buy a dripper, and you have to buy filters, and you have to buy coffee, and you have to buy a grinder. And I was just like, if I can just combine, you know, two things, and the Chemex has the carafe, it has the dripper, and it's all one piece, and you can right. brew a lot of coffee for multiple people. And I was like, I want to share this with more people. So that's why I went with that option.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, plus it's iconic.
Yeah. Iconic.
Yeah.
Totally photogenic and yeah. makes you look like you're doing something special. But I think you have a lot of that just makes me think, you have a lot of people watching your content, listening to you. And I live in your comment section fairly often. And simply cause I love the learning of people. And a lot of people you're getting is people who have, you know, are so completely different from this industry yep. and all the fanatic yeah. enthusiasm. And I'm curious, like, do you think it's the overwhelming amounts of gear of stuff that is scaring people away, or creating a higher barrier of entry where they're like, ah, oh, it's unmotivating? Or do you think that it's actually inspiring and intriguing and kind of like, oh, that's actually kind of cool? Where do you think people lie there? Or do you think it's both? Is there an answer to this?
Yeah, it's a combination of a few of those things, but mainly I think is that people see how many aspects can go into brewing to pulling a shot of espresso, brewing a pour over, and that's foreign to them because they're used to clicking a button or just, you know, throwing their filter in the Mr. Coffee and dumping some coffee in there and going. And so when you see like how intricate and sciencey it can get, it's sort of shocking to some people. And as you know, you guys probably know, negativity is a lot louder than positivity. And if people like a video and they, facts. You know, they love it, they'll share it with a friend, but they're less often they'll leave a comment saying, I enjoy this. But if somebody yeah. is like, wow, this is crazy, I can't believe he does this, what a waste of time, they'll put that in the comments. And so you just have to understand that negativity is a lot louder. And also a good note, like, encourage people when you see something that you like.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. I agree. That's something we've experienced ourselves, like maybe not even just for Mirror, but I know in my personal life with my personal Instagram or even other projects I've worked on, it's like you say something negative, or remember that one story about that one cafe, no names mentioned. I didn't even write anything bad, but just posted on my story about like, I didn't have the funnest experience in at this one place, but I didn't mention their name. I got the most amount of DMs I've ever gotten in one day. Just people asking, who was it?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yep.
Like, that was the point. I wasn't trying to say anything.
Yeah.
So I think that experience to me kind of made me realize, like, yeah, it's actually very important to, when you see something good, to encourage it online, to produce that kind of atmosphere and those kind of vibes with any creator or even just a company and product and the coffee you've tasted, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's super important to yeah. go the opposite way and not be negative.
Yeah, I agree. But then in the same way, it also is pretty beneficial as a content creator. What I can encourage other content creators with is when you see negative comments and, or you know, posting something that's controversial, like saying, did you know that coffee can taste like this? If you add this extra step
right.
that maybe people aren't adding, and it you know, starts a conversation.
Yep.
Even negative parts of the conversation, like, they do a lot to boost stuff in the algorithm. And so I think a lot of that stuff of people being like shocked by, I can't believe there's all this gear, I can't believe there's all this stuff.
Yeah.
It does push it out to more people. And yeah. I think you have to realize that there's so many more people that are enjoying something that are just quiet about it. And yeah. the people that are vocal about their, you know, dislike of something are kind of counterintuitively helping you as well.
Yeah. So yeah, more or less you're talking about like the shock value mm-hmm. of certain piece of content that actually generate kind of the benefit of the algorithm, and then you can basically provide more information, more content.
Yeah. And it helps you to, it also, you know, getting that feedback loop helps you to understand where you can bring more value to people, because where you see that there is confusion, or where you see that there is maybe a missing link that they don't understand, you can kind of go further into that and sort of help bring people up to speed with what's going on, and sort of bring more value to your audience through having that feedback and seeing where the disconnect might be.
100%. That's why I live in the, I live in your comments sometimes. That's actually why I do my best to respond to every single email, every single comment on the podcast. It's like, man, there's just so much insight you're getting from people who are interacting with you. And it actually, like, it creates this nonstop effect of content that you can be creating that can be eventually helping them. Because at the end of the day, chances are, if you have a question, chances are somebody else in the room has the same question. There's a very good chance for that.
Yeah.
And so I, dude, that's just so powerful. I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
Dude.
It's just my mind is just, the neurons are firing. Yeah. Especially when you're like talking about like, man, negativity being louder. And even though there's, I'm an optimist and I could be wrong on this, but I think there's plenty of positivity in the world. It's just oftentimes not very loud.
Yep.
Because we think, oh, I can hold it to myself, or, oh, that person doesn't need that kind word, or, oh, they must get it all the time. But it's like, listen, I don't care how many times you get it. A good word is a good word.
It's much easier to find that motivation to leave a negative comment or a negative response to something when you had a bad experience. When you have a good experience, you go, that was great, I'm glad that happened. But you know, that's not something that you share with people. Hey, I had a great time on my flight over here. So negativity is louder.
That actually goes to show that the norm is actually good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you're just like, oh, whatever, oh, it was a good flight, just like all, like usual, then
you
that
didn't say anything about it.
Yeah. That just goes to show that that's the norm. But I think also the loudness part and how many people talk about the negative.
Yep.
I think easy we can get carried away with saying, oh man, the world is just such a bad place and there's so much negativity. Mm-hmm. But that being said, if you have some positive things, share them.
Yeah. Wow, we went really deep, I feel like, really quick on that one. No, this is like good stuff, because especially coming from someone like yourself who you basically create content for a living, like considering all those things. Yes. But one of the things that you keep bringing up is this focus on bringing value to people. And that's also something I've heard like from Gary Vee, is like making sure that when you are creating content, even if it's like with a twist or a bend towards like marketing, at the end of the day, the goal is to bring value.
Yeah. And that's the biggest hang up that people have when they're trying to get, if you're trying to start creating content, is you have a concept in your mind of what value is and what is valuable. And what I think I had to learn, and Gary Vee was helpful in this, was that you actually don't get to decide what's valuable. It takes a big mindset of humility to, you know, put stuff out there and learn from your audience and learn from the reactions that you get what is going to bring the most value, and also realize that it's probably and it's most likely not the preconceived idea that you had in your head. And so a lot of content creators think when they start out that they need to produce this perfect thing that's cinematic, et cetera, et cetera, when really the thing that's going to bring value to people is probably not what you're thinking, and probably doesn't have to have the level of perceived quality that you have in your mind.
Yeah, and I hate
hearing that. I'll tell you that. I hate it. Like, especially knowing we just took like an hour to set this up, and I'm still mad about how ugly it looks. And I'm like, this. No one's gonna want to listen to this, you know. But wow, like that's something I've been thinking about, and it's a hard pill to swallow.
It's
a hard pill to swallow, but at the same time, it's also just goes to show how self-centered we are when we think.
Yes.
You think you know what good content is.
And you think you know that you could define what that is for someone
else.
You don't get to pick for somebody else, what brings value to them or what they find interesting.
Yes.
Yep. So dang, that's big.
So that's been like a big part of what I've tried to do, is put a bunch of stuff out there and see what people are interested in, see what people like, see what sort of catches people's attention, and then steer my content in that direction so I can bring the most value to people that I can. That's been a big thing that I've learned that I think has been helpful along the way.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, you make a lot of content for people in different industries, and you've had content that went viral. You have content that went viral. I don't have content that went viral. So from both of y'all, like, what I need to hear is, does virality equals value? And just because something went viral, is it more valuable than my poorly colored, Mark, we all know I do that, poorly exposed little short that I post that gets 1,000 versus millions?
That's interesting that you bring that up, because I was literally just having this conversation with somebody on the trade show floor at Expo today. It was somebody that came up and they were like, I'm sort of an aspiring content creator and I want to do long form content that brings value to people, but it seems like the only way to grow and to get that virality is with the short form content. And I was telling them it's not either or, it's not you do this or that, and the value isn't ultimately based on its virality, but you know, you could be bringing value to fewer people and it still brings a lot of value to those people and can be very meaningful even if it doesn't reach the masses. Mm-hmm. But if you are actually creating content from, you know, a humble standpoint and an other centered standpoint, you will bring value to people. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to go viral, but going viral, you know, to a certain extent is an indicator that something is a bigger attention grabber.
Yeah.
From the mass scale.
Yeah.
But I think that people get caught up in trying to go viral when they know what could bring value to a few people, and you know, trying to create content from that standpoint of bringing value to just a few people is often what leads you to going viral.
Yeah.
in the first place, because you're thinking about what's going to bring these specific people value. And then it turns out that that actually is a problem or something that more people than just those few people are interested in.
There's a very interesting distinction that I think is super hard to make, especially for content creators. That virality is a very great metric to saying your stuff resonated with people and they want it. It was good or it was good enough or controversial enough or moving enough, good or bad, that they had to engage with it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, algorithms run on a very simple thing. If you can keep them watching and staying on their app, they'll reward you. If you can't, probably won't reward you as much.
But I would say chasing virality is the easiest way to not go viral.
Yes.
Hands up. Yep. Yeah. I have my hand up.
Yep. Dude, 100%. And I think the distinction I'm making is like, hey, if you're bringing good value and you go viral, that's a good indicator that it's valuable. Yeah. But if it doesn't go viral, at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that it's not bringing value.
Yep.
Because I've had videos for some of my clients where the video does not super hot, but okay-ish. And then I'll actually re-edit it, tweak it just a little bit, repost it, and all of a sudden it gets 500,000 views.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, no. The content didn't change the same. It just might have hit a certain wave that really did it well.
Yeah. So there's so many different variables.
Yeah, as a content creator, you just can't get tied to the metrics.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to stay true to yourself. And if you can just focus on giving value, then the conversation changes, because it's no longer about virality and reaching the millions. Because if at the core you're like, how do I give value to people, to humanity? Then the fact that one person just got value from you is insane.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy. Think about what happens when you have 500 people in the room. You got 500 views on your TikTok, Instagram reel, your photo. 500 is 500. Yeah. People, you guys, that's insane.
Bringing value to 500 people or 20 people or 3 people is really special.
Yeah.
Or 3 people. Yeah. Or 1.
Yeah.
Man, I'll be honest, I struggle with that because like the narrative in my head when I'm like creating content is I've also moved into this weird stage recently where I'm looking at all of these social media platforms not from this perspective where it's a social app to connect with people, but yeah, almost too much from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it stealing some of the joy around creating content. Because in my head, I'm thinking either like, do I want to create content like Tanner? Do I want to create content like, I don't know, Lance, like Jimmy, like what? And I'm not thinking about, yo, Serge, what content do you want to create? Not even what content do I enjoy watching, because I enjoy your content, I enjoy Lance's, but I have to find out, like, what do I want to give to this world just as me, this person? And I think that's really hard to do, like, because it does require a lot of humility. It does require you to stop judging yourself and judging the value of this content. For me, that's been super challenging, especially in the last few months.
Tanner, you have over 1 million followers on TikTok. My question to you is, what are some things that just get to your head that are really challenging for you to wrestle with at that level, at that volume?
I think that there's anticipation of that as you sort of get to that point. I don't think that I personally struggle with it. I know that people do. But for me, what I've just been surprised about is I've always thought, I remember starting on TikTok and having something go viral and thinking, man, what if I had 10,000 followers? And then you hit that point and you're like, this mm-hmm. doesn't feel like anything. I don't, yeah. you know, and then you're like, maybe if I had 100,000 followers, and you get to that point and you're like, that doesn't feel satisfying at all. And you get to 1 million followers and you go, wow, that doesn't feel how I thought it would feel. And so I think the thing that has stood out to me the most is how meaningless it feels to pursue a number. And what I've realized in the last just couple of days being here at Expo and seeing people that I've interacted with online is how much more meaningful those relationships are that you build, those friendships that you develop through being in the industry and being in the coffee scene together with people. I've talked to so many people at Expo that I was just so encouraged to meet them in person and to see like they're a joyful and just excited, you know, happy, encouraging person. And I'm like, that's so cool to develop those relationships. And it's been so much more meaningful and impactful than what you feel from hitting a certain number on social media. And that's why I think it's such vanity to pursue metrics and much more fulfilling to try to bring value to people.
I think what you just said hits on a different level for me, because I remember in my previous job and like previous career, it was also very like data analytics driven, like, hey, how many responses did you get, this and that. So I had to think around, or I had to process that idea of thinking about like those numbers actually equal to real living, moving people. And to be able to look at it that way, it changes your whole perspective, because yeah, then if you're looking at number one, that's a whole individual with a whole experience, with a different worldview, with everything. It just makes the whole experience for me as someone who cares about data, makes us so much more dynamic mm-hmm. and so much bigger. And it does bring purpose to all of these digits and all of these analytics. So I totally resonate with that.
Yeah. And I think that ultimately when you chase the like metrics in terms of thinking like, can I get myself to this position in this scene or in this industry? Feeling how unfulfilling that is as somebody who has like gotten a lot of followers only by God's grace, but like, it doesn't feel like anything to me when you get there. It doesn't feel like anything. What is really meaningful is that it's a business and a way to make income that I can provide for my wife, which is incredible. And that's so much more fulfilling. And that's what I'm talking about with those relationships and people that you actually connect with and people that you can actually provide for through what you do is way more meaningful than vanity metrics that people are mostly chasing.
Yeah. The plaques.
Yeah.
I I mean, I'll take a YouTube 100,000
plaque. Yeah,
I know. I'll take one of those. Listen, I'm not gonna pretend like I don't care. Wait,
do you have a plaque?
I do.
Nice.
A YouTube plaque?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
But I feel like,
when did you get that?
I feel like I didn't earn it. Because there's these YouTubers that are doing long form video and just trying so hard. Like you have like legends like Lance and Kyle and people that have worked for so long to bring value to people and build up their following. And then, you know, I just post a few shorts and it's like, boom. So I have it, but that's why I think the real meaning is, comes from actually bringing value to people and helping people.
But, you know, but on that same conversation, I mean, even by that, you can't tell people what's value.
Yep.
You know, like, oh, Lance is posting these videos. Who cares? You decided to bring value through 15-second, 20-second short-form content.
Yeah.
And there, you guys are both winning. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You win. Everybody wins. Hey, yep. You get a dollar. You get a dollar. You get a subscriber.
get a subscriber.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's not. Your other people's success isn't at the detriment of your own.
Yeah.
And 100%. Yeah. And a lot of times, like you just reminded me of the way that I think about creating short form content versus long form, or you know, this style of content versus that style, is I think about the niche or the community of specialty coffee as like a community, and we're all like serving different, we're all at different positions. And so I think of somebody like Lance, who is really bringing value and helping people that are deep within the specialty coffee community. Yeah. And that is really valuable. And then I think of myself and some other creators like myself, and, you know, primarily the people that are doing short form content, you know, more so, is that we're standing at like, you know, we're standing at like the gates of the specialty coffee in scene, and seeing people go by and saying, hey, check out this specialty coffee thing. It's pretty cool. You might want to get into it. Yeah. This is a way that people are learning about specialty coffee as an industry, and people are learning about the hobby. And I think that's where I'm focused a lot, is trying to show people that may not have been interested in coffee that there's something special going on here, that, you know, I wish that I had known about it sooner, that I could sort of get into the hobby, because it's super fun. And I just want to share that with people who might not have known about that.
I think that's absolutely beautiful, because that's literally when I was, you know, watching your content, just from the beginning. Like, I followed your content on TikTok literally from the beginning. As you started to progress and grow, even now recently, every time I stumble across your content, I'm always thinking, like, this is very interesting, because he's tapping into an audience, a group of people, and he's taking the hobby, the enthusiasm of specialty coffee, and bringing it to a completely different audience than Lance, than myself, than anybody else, than this podcast will ever reach. And I'm like after thinking about that, I'm just like, oh man, but that is so beneficial. That is so valuable, not just for those people, but for the coffee industry in general. Like, I can't imagine myself 10 years ago stumbling across a video like one of your videos, and just, I would love to see what Mark at 16 or 17, stumbling across a piece of your content, what he would think.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine what that would do to me, and how that might have kickstarted my career, where to me, back in my days, like when I was 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, like the first time I saw anything remotely close was to a cafe in Portland when I was living in Portland. That's crazy.
And on the other side of that, I feel like I've experienced the other side of that, where people see my content and they come in the DMs and they say, okay, I'm in. I want to get into it. I want to do it. How can I learn more about this? What can I do? And that's when I say, you should go follow these five people on YouTube. You should go subscribe to these five channels that are bringing value on a deeper level of how you can really get in depth into specialty coffee. So I think that, you know, everybody can serve in their own unique position in the coffee industry. And some of that, like mine, is really outward facing, of trying to bring people and show them how cool coffee can be.
Yeah. it kind of reminds me of the aspect of the welcome team at a church.
Yeah.
And ushers, you know what I mean? Like, you can't underestimate that importance of that when, especially you come into a space that may be intimidating and coffee comes up a lot of the times for specialty specifically comes off very intimidating. Yeah. And then to be able to influence people to just take their first step in and remove that level of intimidation and then lead them along the way and then point towards someone like Lance. Yeah. And point towards like a 30-minute brew tutorial versus, you yeah. know, a less than a minute one.
Yes.
So I think, yeah, 100% resonate with that. Y'all are both sharing, like, it's hitting me deep because I'm thinking, like you were saying, when I started brewing coffee, I'm like, I don't, what did I find to be able to guide me along the way and how to make a pour over?
Yeah.
I honestly don't even remember. Maybe I was just copying baristas that I saw or something like that, you know? So it's a whole different world. And I am one, I'm super grateful to see more influencers with different niches and all these different coffee reviews.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And I think that there's a negative connotation around influencers, or there can be in the coffee scene. And I think what that comes from is seeing somebody that is as excellent as Lance and seeing somebody that's as excellent and does, you know, what somebody like Kyle does, those really informational people on YouTube. And I think that people just don't realize, if all of the content was like that, you'd get bored pretty fast.
Yeah.
And, yes. There's value to the other side of it where you're getting people interested as well. And it doesn't have to all follow that super educational, super in-depth long form mm-hmm. format in order to be, high quality, in order to be good and to bring value to people.
Yeah. I mean, look at Morgan, right?
Yeah.
Morgan's content is very, I would say very niche. At first I was kind of caught off guard. I didn't know what to think of it until I started watching it. I'm like, that's pretty cool. And now she was just today competing yeah. in the USBC and is killing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Morgan rubbed me the wrong way the first time I came across her stuff on TikTok. I was like, dude, Morgan, what is this? Come on. This isn't specialty coffee content. And then that's when seeing a lot of these creators come up on TikTok, that's something I've just been realizing is that they're doing their part, and actually that is better than none of it.
Right.
That is better that there's variety, that there's differences of opinions, but we're all in the big picture are all heading in the same mm-hmm. general direction.
Yeah.
And if it was all the way, exactly the way I wanted it or the way I would create it, that would just be so limiting. And this, you know, going back to like content creation, what we talked about actually in the beginning about adding value,
yep.
is that me, the way I create, the way I communicate, the way I provide information and value is going to be so unique to my personality, to my skill set, to my knowledge and understanding, but it's also only going to appeal to only a certain group of people.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden Morgan creates content in her style, in her way, with her aneurysms and
yeah.
Thoughts and ideas and all this stuff. And all of a sudden she's now grabbing hold of an audience that I will never, ever be able to resonate with them quite as well as she would. And actually for the big picture, that's good for everybody.
Yeah. What you have to realize too is that people like me, I go and I learn from Lance's videos on YouTube. I'm a big, you know, James Hoffman's videos, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I go take the things that I've learned and start brewing coffee like that and figure out how I can package that in a really cool video. Yeah. And I think that there's a lot to be said for those people that are on the cutting edge of coffee brewing and coffee science mm-hmm. and all of that cool stuff. Mm-hmm. I just try to, I learn so much and I get so much value from that. I try to take that and turn it into content that I can show people, here's what's going on in the specialty coffee industry. It's pretty crazy and cool. And you might be interested in this. And people are very much interested.
Speaking of that, do you remember your first piece of coffee content that you consumed?
Oh, that I consumed. It had to have been because I didn't become interested in specialty coffee through watching a piece of content. So what I first watched was when I decided, I think I need to make pour overs. So the things that stand out to me were, Seattle Coffee Gear videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. They were kind of, they put out a lot of like helpful stuff for people that were just getting into coffee. So I watched a bunch of their stuff, and I listened to The Coffee Podcast.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Good. And I remember listening to The Coffee Podcast, and they were talking about pour overs, and I had a little batch brewer at the time, and I was like, okay, I'm going to invest in a pour over setup and get into it. And that's what led to my first piece of content that I ever made, which was me. Nice. It's this really shaky video where I held the phone in my left hand and the kettle in my right hand. And I was like ruined with my new Stag X dripper that I was really proud of.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's dope. Mark, do you remember your first piece of content that you consumed? Coffee related, of course. Is it a podcast?
No, it was definitely a YouTube video. For sure. I just don't remember what exactly, but I do remember it was a time where I just learned about specialty coffee, the whole niche. And I was home. I moved back home from Portland, and I was like, okay, we literally had no really spectacular coffee in town. And I was like, I need to learn how to make this. So I started getting into like how to make a pour over.
Yeah.
And that was when like I kind of got my sister bought me my first hand grinder, which was my first ever grinder that I brewed all my pour overs with. And I remember just looking up recipes. And one thing I remember very prominently was thinking, there are hundreds of recipes and all of them are saying very different things. I was like, this is too overwhelming. This is confusing.
Yeah.
How do I even know what if I'm doing the right thing? Like, I was afraid of messing up and screwing up. And I see that so much around the internet where people are just afraid to even try because they don't want to mess it up. Where at the end of the day, it's like, hey, there's no way of messing it up. Just do the thing and then enjoy and then work from there. That's it. This is just like, take it easy. It's just a hobby. You're just making coffee and you can learn as you go. But I remember, I think it was either James Hoffman's video of a V60, or it was one of Scott Rayo's video, or it was one of Stumptown's video.
Yeah.
Oh, I watched remember Stumptown. Yeah.
That was, I think one of those videos was one of the recipe videos.
So. Do you remember the beatboxing Stumptown one? Or it was, man.
They have a really fun one, like a
hip hop one.
It's like an outdoor one?
Yeah.
That one's really good.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's
I watched some serious Stumptown. It was vibey.
Yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it in a long time. I don't know if we have to dig it up.
I never thought in 100 years that would come up in a podcast.
Yeah,
it's so good.
But like what you were saying, I would get stressed out when I was trying to, you know, I would try to follow a recipe and I'd be like, oh man, it says it should be done in 3 minutes, and it's been 7 minutes, and. You know, and because I would use the Chemex and clog it up like it was my job. Mm-hmm. And but I think that there were so many coffees that I enjoyed, but I stressed out about it didn't turn out like the recipe said, it didn't finish in this time or whatever. And I wish that people would go more based off of, is this coffee that I enjoy? And not even stressing out about like tasting notes or am I discerning the right flavors, but do I enjoy this coffee? Yes or no? Does this taste special to me? Mm-hmm. Yes or no? And and I think you can relax in that instead of being stressed out about it. And it's a way more enjoyable experience.
Wow.
Man. Another question. Oh, go ahead.
I was just thinking as you're saying that, I'm like, dude, you can just rest in grace. Yes. Just enjoy it as you are. Come as you are.
Come as you are.
And
preach it, brother.
What were you going to ask?
Okay. No, it made me think of, do y'all remember the first time, like in the beginning, when you started brewing coffee, what was the first thing you noticed in your brew method that made you ask that question? Like, for example, when I started brewing pour overs, I started noticing that different coffees had different blooms. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why does this one coffee like has the big balloon and it looks kind of cool? It must be good if it's that big, right? And then I'm like, and then other coffees, like you just pour water and the water just goes down. I remember that was the first thing I noticed in brewing that made me want to ask that question, do more research. What about for y'all?
That's a good question.
Damn. Yeah, I think for me it was like I didn't ever realize how important grind size was. And I thought like the coffee is ground at a medium grind level. And that's what the recipe said. I'm doing what the recipe says. And it's supposed to brew in this amount of time. And it has been so long and it is not. And I didn't realize how much of like, you know, the single most important variable when it comes to the variables that you adjust to, you know, make tasty coffee was your grind size. And I thought that, you know, so here's the grind size that works. This applies to everything. And then you'd brew a new coffee and you'd be like, why doesn't it work now? Why doesn't it work with this coffee? And so, yeah, I didn't realize how different coffees were and how important adjusting your grind size was, you know, as a beginner, as somebody that was just learning.
That's excellent. I have no answer to that.
Dang.
I'm so lost.
What
you
about
stumped me?
No. Okay, Mr. Stumptown. No, what about espresso? When you dove into espresso, what was like, was there anything for you, Mark? Because you worked in a cafe for a while.
That's right. That was my first exposure to espresso, actually, brewing in a cafe. I think actually what really surprised me was that when I was getting training, because I had some experience of brewing pour overs before, when I stepped behind the bar, like for the first time, like turned the shot on, I was like, oh, I know how to dial in. Because I was like, cool. This is the same game. And I see things, everything as a game. Like that's just me. Like I'm like running mirror is like a big fat video game for me. And I'm like how do I get through this boss? And I'm like, challenge accepted. Like nobody wants to buy mirror. How do I do this? Like this podcast sucks. Why? Like let's this is just a bigger boss, you know, but that I mean, Sergio, it's a bigger boss, folks. I was a huge video game player back in the day. Like nobody believes me too when I tell them. They're like,
I can share a story.
None of my friends believe me. But like, I mean, I remember I playing Madden with G, and when there was like a bad call or something, I was supposed to win and he won. I attacked him. Yeah. I literally jumped on my brother and started trying like punching him. Like I was fierce. And then I played Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas. Dude, I remembered every single street name on Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas. Like, insane.
Yeah. Well, can I share a story?
Fine, I guess. Expose me.
I am going to expose
the thumbnail is going to be like Mark Kotrowski exposed.
Thumbnail. I mean, first comment. If you don't use what just happened in a reel with sound effects, like everything's running mirror is a game, I expect a Super Mario sound effect with like that classic Gary V little emoji content thing on top of the screen.
Yes.
Is that sold? Okay. Anyway, now moving on. The story is, I remember when we would, Mark and I have a pretty big age gap. What, 8 years, 7 years?
I don't know.
Something like that. So when I was like a teenager, we had PlayStation 2 at that point, I think, and we had Crash Bandicoot, which was one of Mark's favorite games.
Yeah.
But because I couldn't just let him play the video game, and we had VHSs, I would start playing the game, throw in a VHS, and click record on the VHS, and basically record the screen onto that VHS. So then when I had to let Mark play, I would turn on the VHS and just give him an unplugged remote.
Nasty. No. Nasty.
Savage.
Betrayed.
But it worked.
Listen, I don't have that in my memory. That's what got you addicted. I don't have that in my memory at all. I don't remember that. And I'm like, how dare you? Like, there's a part of my memory that's so dark. Mark, like, how dare you of all people?
He wiped it from his memory.
It's terrible. But anyways, like back to this whole thing. So like, I think about everything as like a video game that I need to beat. Yep. And so for me, I was like, oh, this is the same thing. Coffee's under extracted. It's running too fast. I know you need to make the grind finer a little bit. And that was a game for me where I'm like, okay, I just need to find the sweet spot and I'm just tweaking along as I go. That felt really good to just be like, that was a point where I'm like, everything kind of like slid right into place. And I was like, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
That was apart from like tamping. Of course, I got into that where that was like, oh, this is a new ball game. But that was a very clear moment where I'm like, okay, this.
Yeah, more people need to have that moment too. That's the biggest thing, because I do some customer service stuff and answer people's emails that write into Flair, and help them deal with, you know, their espresso problems and making better espresso. And the number one issue that we see is people go, I cannot, like, my Flair isn't creating pressure. And yeah. And you go, okay, well, it's not the machine that makes the pressure. It's actually your coffee grounds that are creating the resistance necessary to build pressure. Mm-hmm. And you're not grinding fine enough, and or you need to have a grinder that can grind for espresso. Right. And so, yeah, once people have that eureka moment of like, oh, it's the grind size, and if I grind finer, it'll, you know, I'll be able to create that pressure, I'll be able to extract more. That's the big variable to play around with, and people don't really understand, and they think pressure comes from the pressure gauge. The pressure gauge creates the pressure. Yeah, right. And so when it's not reading any pressure, they say, my pressure gauge isn't working. Yeah. And you're like, well, it's working really great.
Right. Valid. Yeah. And yeah. That makes sense, because you know, I can imagine too, somebody new to this would see like all the advertising, be like, oh, that's a 9-bar espresso machine, so it should be working at 9-bar. You know, yeah. that's just like a preconceived idea, yeah, without knowing necessarily how it works. But all right, we're gonna wrap this up. It's been almost an hour. I know I can talk for plenty more time. This has just been such a good conversation.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tanner.
Yeah, and I need to say, because I forgot to say this, that Mark and Sergi were the first ones to ever send me coffee, because of my TikToks. And it was literally like, it was like I was in the hundreds of followers range or something like that. And I just remember that was like a really special thing for me. I was like, wow, this is so encouraging. And the coffee was really tasty, but I just remember being so encouraged by that to keep going and to create more content. So I just wanted to say thank you guys for that. And like, what a cool full circle moment for me to be back as a guest on the podcast, years later. How long has it been?
Two or three years.
I remember the early days of the Instagram live streams that you guys were doing. Which was huge. Yeah.
Wow. Speaking around that time, I actually had a friend of mine who's also a regular at the cafe, came in one day and was like, dude, I saw your coffee on like social media, on TikTok.
Oh, that's so cool.
And they were like, yeah, like this person named Tanner. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I know who Tanner is. I didn't know that you already like went viral at that point. And I didn't realize that. And when they said that, I was like, yeah, I know Tanner, kind of thing. And they were completely like shocked and amazed. They were like, you know Tanner? Like, what? And I was like, yeah. So then I double checked how many followers you had. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. It's a whole different, like, we already had some form of connection there before your virality. Mm-hmm. And that person knew you as someone famous. And it was pretty like humbling and wild. I'm like, oh yeah, that's super dope. So this to me is also a kind of dream come true. Like, we're sitting down doing this in person, chatting like friends, like the real thing. And then knowing that from the very beginning, we kind of saw what you were going to possibly do, but we kind of saw it and kind of put a little seed in there. Yeah. You know,
listen, since we're giving out some good words, because there's negativity some roses, because negativity is loud. I think it is a really cool full circle moment. And what I really honor about you, Tanner, honestly, is that even just meeting you today for the first time and having this conversation, I'm so glad that you're just still a really great, incredible, easygoing human being. The amount of times that what you've been able to achieve has really changed people and transformed people into better or for worse, but oftentimes it's for worse or whatever. That's really admirable. That's really commendable. And so, and it goes, you know, I think a lot back to what, I mean, we shared a lot during this episode, but like defining what the success means to you. What are the value metrics that you live on? Is it just virality and numbers, or is it relationships and I'm adding value to people and just everything. Like, I'm pumped to see this happen. And especially, I will say this. Once again, video games. That was really fun for me to be able to see you in the early days and seeing your content. I was like, oh, I have a really good feeling about this. And that was honestly why I sent you the coffee, because I was like, oh man, I just want to give to this guy because I have a feeling there's something beautiful about this. This is going somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, I just had that intuition. And so to see it all this and you having you on the pod, just thank you. So well, good.
Yeah, thank you for that encouragement. And I just want to say, like, praise God. It's nothing from myself, but you know, I always just think every gift and every opportunity and every success that I have is ultimately from the Lord and nothing that I've done on my own. And so praise God for that. And, you know, the Bible says that every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. And I'm just I feel so blessed that God in his grace has, you know, given me this opportunity to pursue my passion and try to bring value to people. But ultimately, like, you have to stay humble and realize that it's not from you, and that ultimately you are serving the Lord and he gives you opportunities, and I'm just trying to be faithful, trying to provide for my family, and some pretty cool and special things can come through that by the grace of God. It's really awesome.
So dope.
Preach. As we wrap up this episode, for real, you can follow Tanner Colson everywhere on social media. I'm sure all of you already do, but I'm just gonna throw it out there.
Thank you.
Tanner, what are you looking forward to?
Short term, we have another couple days of Expo, and day one was just wild, crazy, meeting so many people that I've only met online before, so much hustle and bustle, so much innovation. It's cool to just walk around and just be like, I can't believe all of this. It's huge in there. The Expo Center is just massive. So yeah, I'm excited about the next couple days of that. Yeah, people always ask me stuff like that. What are your goals, or what are you looking forward to? What are you trying to accomplish? I don't have as much of career expectations or goals as much as personal goals. I'm really looking forward to getting home and spending time with my wife, because this is like the first time that we've spent a significant chunk of time apart since we got married. So I'm really excited to get back. But in the short term, I'm really pumped about the Expo, and it's been so cool, even just the first day, and having you guys there tomorrow and the next day will be such a blast, and you get to see some cool stuff that's going on the industry. Yeah.
It's great. I mean, that's a great place to be.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's a really great place to be, that we're just enjoying life and things are going well for you. And, that's great.
Stoked. Well, I'm stoked to be here. Like, I haven't been at Expo since 2018 in Seattle. So,
what are you guys looking for? I'm so sorry. Trying to wrap this up. I wanted to know what you guys are looking forward to most about Expo in Portland.
I think for me, because the last time I was at an Expo was 2018. I've made so many friends and connections in the industry since then. So honestly, like, this is what I was looking forward to more than anything, because when we spoke with you about doing this episode, that was like one of our biggest things. Like, when we talked about priorities, what's a priority that we want to accomplish? We were like, okay, this episode with Tanner, but also like meeting people on the show floor, but also it's outside special. Of that, restaurants. It is at the end of the day about the people, and I get the Expo to me feels almost like a big conference that brings people together to listen to something or to be united around something, but also it's just the people. So
I've been trying to go for the last like 3 or 4 years. So we'll see what happens. I have literally no expectation, but honestly, my biggest goal, I told Sergio, I'm like, honestly, I could just care less. I want to be there to experience it. But then also my biggest goal is like, how do I just connect with people that we virtually only connected with, like yourself?
Yeah.
That's already a win for me. That's really all I want.
Same. Totally. We're all on the same page.
Wow. That's wonderful.
I love it.
Alrighty, folks.
Wrap it up, Mark.
Alrighty.
Tell the people.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Sessions podcast. This has been such a delightful episode. I'm loving it. loving it. Absolutely so loving it. Let's wrap it up it's before I start saying anything else. All right. As we always say, friends, as we always say, one last thing, reflect what's good.
Reflect what's good. Yeah.
Cheers.